This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Welcome back to Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape. Let us help you escape your mind.
Welcome back to Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape. We have episode number 212 today. We're going to be discussing psychedelics and the psilocybin summit and TAM integration, with our guest Daniel Shankin, aka Sitaramdas. And we'll get into that in a second. Before we get started, head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/mindescapepodcast. For just $2 a month, you'll get exclusive guest episodes and segments. We've got a ton of stuff on there. So if you listen to our show, you like it, just for $2 a month, you'll get tons of stuff that's not on any of our other platforms. So go ahead on over there. Also, you can find us on Discord. And actually, recently, we just started doing these Twitter spaces. I did one the other day. We had like 25 people in there. It was an awesome conversation. Lots of people sharing their personal experiences. It was amazing. So we're probably going to be doing that once a week or once every other week. So find us on Twitter if you have not already. And one more thing before we get started, head on over to Indra's Web. IndrasWeb.org is the live social media platform we created to connect open minds. So whether you're talking about this topic or metaphysics or ancient civilizations, whatever it is, it's the perfect place to do it. And the goal, again, is to connect open minds. And you can speculate, hypothesize, theorize, do all that wonderful stuff. So go set up a profile today. And without further ado, welcome on the show, Mr. Daniel Shankin.
Thanks so much for having me. It's wonderful to escape with you on this rainy Sunday afternoon.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on. I've heard a couple podcasts you've been on. I think one of them was the Psychedelics Today one and maybe a couple others. And I know we met last year. I helped do something for your Psilocybin Summit, which is coming up. What are the dates for that?
The dates are September 16th to the 20th. And yeah, it's 4 days celebrating the myth, magic, science, and culture of the sacred mushroom. We cover all of the topics that your regular psychedelic science conference doesn't cover. You know, you can talk about those sorts of, you could talk about hardcore science, you could talk about policy and entrepreneurship anywhere. But where else are you going to talk about psychedelics and midwifery?
Yeah, I know last year you had like Paul Stamets and, you know, some of the big dogs. Dennis McKenna is going to be this year? Did I see that correctly?
Dennis is coming back for the second time.
Awesome.
Which is great. It's great to have him back. And this year we are taking a bit of like an eco-conscious focus. There is a guy named Richard Doyle. He's a professor at Penn State, and he coined the term ecodelia. Mm-hmm. Manifestation out of the environment, you know, and how mushrooms are manifested from the environment. They in no small part manifest the environment. We kind of know now that mycelial networks manage the ecosystem in no small part, and that also we're a part of nature as well. And, you know, when we start to relate with, you know, sacred medicines like that, we start to see that relationship a lot more clearly. Mm. And so we have a lot of people talking about that. And Dennis is offering a talk called The Mind of Gaia, which, you know, really, if you guys know Dennis, like he really rides the line between really rigorous science and the more mystical. You know, he's really, really, really good at having a foot in both worlds.
Yeah, I like that about him for sure. And that's kind of what we like to do on the show too. It's finding that true balance between academic and scientific stuff and also the mystical and spiritual side of life. And I think, I think it should be a good one. And I really enjoyed it last year. And, you know, I think I did like a 5-hour, I don't even know what you called it, like a intensive, I think is what you call the session with Tom Lane. And he went through all the sacred mushroom rituals and codices and texts and everything. And that was pretty interesting. And I mean, like you said, it's just a balance of a lot of different things. And I think you do a great job bringing a ton of different people together. And I think that that's what this is all about, right?
It is what it's all about. And the nice thing about folks like Dennis, you know, people know him, people love him, and people will come to see Dennis, but then they'll stay to see a wide variety of people that they've never heard of. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people out there with really, really important things to say that don't necessarily have a platform and are perhaps a little bit too out there for a ordinary science conference. You know, and so giving them a chance to, like I said, talk about psychedelics and midwifery, you know, talking about the use of psychedelics in, you know, archaic Africa, you know, historical psychedelic use in Ireland. We've got a lot of the eco stuff happening, and we've got a lot of cross-cultural things happening. We've got some folks from the Psychedelic Society of India, which until recently I didn't really even know was a thing. You know, what are they doing over there? I don't know. I want to know.
Yeah.
So is this event digital, or you can access it from your home?
Yeah, it's online. And we were doing them online before the pandemic even. You know, the technology came out, and it was like I wanted to do things online because I can't always just travel to like Anarchapoco, you know, or, you know, Breaking Convention, or, you know, the event in Prague, or the event in Hungary, or even, you know, the event across the country is not always practical for me. You know, I'm a husband and a father, and, you know, it's not even really that fun to be away from my family. But, you know, it's like, I still want the experience. I still want to build a community. I still want the knowledge. And, you know, with this, it's possible.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that our podcast was able to do because Michael's in Chicago, I'm in Detroit, and we've been able to reach people all across the world. So that's really been very eye-opening for us to see other cultures and how they perceive things and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And Detroit has an amazing psychedelic community as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty prevalent down here, yeah.
That's how we got into all this stuff. I mean, when we were in high school, there wasn't really any communities of the stuff. There were some people doing some stuff or here and there, whatever, but we got heavy into jam bands. We were heavy into Fish. We were heavy into the Grateful Dead. We were heavy into all the stuff. And then we started a band too. And that's kind of how we got into this thing. And the only resource we had was Irowid, you know? And
right.
That's kind of what it was back then. There really wasn't any of this mystical talk. I mean, there's a couple books out there or whatever, but it was just us reading trip reports on Irowid and imagining things and playing music and jamming and stuff like that. So what's your origin story with all this?
It's the same thing. I come from the psychedelic rock and roll lineage. I found my parents' record collection.
Yeah.
They had the Beatles, they had the Mamas and the Papas, they had Jeff Beck and Jimi Hendrix and the Doors. And I really like that aesthetic, you know, this like the peace and love kind of thing really spoke to me, and the creativity and the art I really liked. And I had this sense that psychedelics were in the middle of it. And it seemed like it was a grand experiment that wasn't over, like the hippie experiment. And that I still wanted to see that culture sort of prevail over the modern culture that I was living in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I figured that if I wanted to participate, I should see what all the fuss was about with the psychedelics and it took, you know, I liked that vibe, and kind of the rest was history. But I was also aware that, you know, the Beatles had a yoga practice, you know, Ram Dass had a yoga practice. And before the word integration was like a big thing, it's like, that's what I knew people were doing. They were doing yoga practice. They were doing meditation practice. And that's sort of where I landed. You know, it's like, you know, one of the big books that I found was Be Here Now. And at the back of the book, there was Cookbook for a Sacred Life. And Ram Dass said, you know, this experience is real. And if you want to live it every day, you have to do your work, mm-hmm. you know? And so I think that's something that's sort of big now is kind of doing your work, taking care of, you know, your shadow, you know, emptying out the skeletons in your closet. But that doesn't mean that, you know, we can't go see a good show. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we get to do the work like at the show while the music, you know, in the middle of an antelope.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I completely agree. And I think, though, the weird thing, though, is, and I don't know if this was true for you, even though it sounds like you kind of come from a similar background in the music aspect of it and everything. I really, other than my first time and being like open to the idea that there's more to life than what meets the eye, you know, because like I was raised Catholic or whatever, and I never really had a connection to that. And then when I got a little bit older, I'm like, I'm not going to do this. This is not, you know, something. And it was never like really thrust upon me, but it was just something I went along with. And then first psilocybin experience, boom. I think I was probably 15 or 16 years old. And it just completely changed my outlook on life. And from there, I've always mm-hmm. been curious about like mysterious and mystical and anomalies and things like that. So is that true for you too? Like, did you feel like your first experience kind of catapulted you into this mindset or lifestyle?
Well, there was, like a lot of things, there was some gradual stuff, and then there were some quantum leaps, right? And so psychedelics were very, very kind and kind of gentle, if not, you know, occasionally crazy-making and harrowing and, you know, intense. But for the most part, you know, I got to have, you know, my teenage years were, you know, we were exploring. I mean, I know that there was some sort of consciousness to it. It wasn't purely recreational. You know, we were doing both. We sort of knew there was something out there. We were yearning for something greater, but we didn't know how to do it. You know, it's just a couple of kids in a basement or in the woods or something. And it wasn't until later that I started doing yoga practice. It was probably inspired by the psychedelic use. And then I started doing yoga and reading books on Buddhism and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, let's become a Buddha. Let's become enlightened. You know, that's what's in the book. That's what you're supposed to do. And then I took a trip and the Buddhas came out of the woodwork and they said, oh, you want to be like us. This is all the stuff you need to handle. Right. This is all the stuff, all of the big mess in your way that if you want to be like us, you have to handle. And that was very humbling. Right. And that sort of catapulted me onto the path. And then they also said, if you want to be like us, this is what it'll be like. And they showed me the most magnificent, glorious, like connection with the Almighty. I don't know that I had ever experienced. And they were like, this is what it'll be like if you clean up that. And I said, deal. Yeah, I've been working on it ever since.
And you mentioned Ram Dass saying like you got to put in the work. So I mean, I think that's common among, you know, I've been meditating for probably 5 or 6 years pretty intensely, but mm-hmm. I remember always thinking that like who meditates, does this even work kind of a thing. And I know I talk to a lot of people now, they're like, oh, I've tried it, or I tried it for 10 minutes and it didn't work. And it's like, you actively have to like keep doing it until it kind of does.
Yeah, it's like working out for your mind.
It's not something that you just fall into and it's like, oh, it works. You know, it's something that, you know, you might have the first few times moments of peace and stillness, but then, you know, how do you get to those deeper levels? And I think that that's where most people don't understand, is like when they hear people talking about meditation and going to these places, you know, they don't realize that it takes that much work, right? Like, I mean, do you have a similar take on that?
Well, also, I think that a lot of people might not be doing the right practice for them. There's a lot of bad information about meditation out there, and there's a lot of people, so they might be doing the wrong practice. They might also have the wrong expectations, right? They might be trying to go for a certain thing, like, oh, I can't get my mind to be still. And I was like, I know you have all of these voices that need to be heard. You have all of these emotions, you have all of these feelings, you have all of these unmet needs that are desperately trying to be heard, and it's not your job to try and repress them any further, right? That's, society has been doing that for the past 20, 30 years,
right?
It's your job to start to like evacuate your distress, right? And instead of trying to make your mind quiet, try to like make your expectations quiet enough so that you can hear like your inner child like cry about stuff that it's still sad about since you were 8, instead of just saying get over it, right? It's like there's no kindness there, and be like, just get over it. It's like, no, let yourself feel it on the cushion. You know, so you don't act out. You know, there's a lot of grown-ups having temper tantrums all the time because they haven't worked out the stuff from their childhood, you know. And we don't use that term for grown-ups a lot, but you know, it's even funny. You know, I have a kid, so we use the term grown-ups and we use the term temper tantrum. But so often I see, you know, people not getting their way, or people's expectations not being met, and they revert back to childhood and they create some kind of mess, and then they look back on it and they don't know how it happened. Right?
That's absolutely true. Yeah.
And I do it too.
You know, and the interesting thing for me is like, I think for me, the real work has always been the dose of psilocybin in the dark, meditating, and then I think of things that I haven't even thought of in years or things that have happened to me, and like you work it out in your mind and you just try and understand. And I think that you can do that probably through meditation too, obviously, in mindfulness and everything like that. But I think that there's something to be said about the combination, for me at least, like you said, everything's kind of personal, the combination of those two things coming together,
right.
And experiencing like things from your history that, and it's weird because I feel like sometimes my memory that comes up in those experiences is more vivid and reliable than even my memory of those things in my day-to-day consciousness, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. There's tons of things that I haven't thought of in 100 years. And then they pop up and you're like, oh, this is still undealt with. And, you know, and one of the things that's cool is, you know, we talk about understanding. You use the term understanding, which is a great word. You know, the psilocybin has this way of allowing me to like understand with my heart as well as my head. Right. So on one level, like I'm figuring it out, like with my mind. And on the other hand, it's like, I don't really understand it until I have compassion for it.
That makes a lot of sense. Do you feel like, given the fact that, you know, you are deeply into meditation and you're interested obviously in psychedelics and psilocybin, do you feel like that thing is true where they're like the ultimate goal is to not use the psychedelics but achieve those states just via meditation or just via like, or do you think that there's really nothing to that? Like, how do you feel?
Oh, who cares?
That? Yeah.
Who cares what you do? You know, as long as you're not like hurting yourself or frying your brain or like, you know, cause there are drugs that will legitimately fry your brain. Mushrooms, you know, that really would take a lot, but you know, there's research chemicals out there and, you know, poorly made, you know, underground pharmaceuticals that can hurt you after a while. But I don't see any reason why somebody wouldn't maybe like celebrate on a solstice for the rest of their life.
Right. I was just curious because that is like the archetype, right? Like you hear from a lot of people that it's like the whole goal is to transcend past that. Or I see a lot of people talking about that. It's like, you know, psychedelics are the easy path or the shortcut or something like that.
I mean, that's more stigma.
Right.
Like we live in a society where that stuff is stigmatized and we don't. And so unpacking that is difficult even for drug users. You know, there's like a lot of internalized hatred and judgment that we have. And we think to ourselves, oh, if like one day I didn't need to use this magical molecule that, you know, is possibly responsible for the development of my consciousness, then I'll be better.
Right.
It's like if you believe in stoned ape, which I do on some days, you know, the only reason you can talk is because of mushrooms. And we know from studies that mushrooms create more stable and strong connections in your neurology, right? Your nervous system thrives off mushrooms.
Well, there's that chart that shows pre-dose and then after-dose, and it shows all the neural connections off the charts on the after-dose. So, I mean, obviously something's happening.
Well, there's that. So we do have more creativity, right? So we function better in the moment, but it also like works on like nervous system cellular production. And again, I'm not a scientist, but you know, this who said it was Alan. So Alan Watts was the guy who said, when you get the message, hang up the phone,
mm-hmm.
right? Alan Watts died of alcoholism. Like he was, he had a lot of wonderful things to say. Right. But he wasn't a Buddha.
A very quotable, right. I mean, what would you even consider him, like a philosopher? Or?
Yeah, you know, he's like, he's full of good sound bites. You know, he works really well with like trance music. You know, if you need a clip for some trance music, it's really, really great. And a lot of his stuff is brilliant. A lot of his stuff is dated. And so I don't know. That's my thought, is like, watch out for internalized stigma and do what you want. Don't try to live up to the expectation of a dead, drunken philosopher.
Well, and I agree with that too. Like, the Alan Watts stuff aside, I just feel like I mean, I'm not going to go into it, but we've talked about it a million times a show. The reason why, you know, for a while I took a little break off psychedelics in my life, and then I came back to them because I had developed OCD, which was so bad that it was resistant to any sort of, you know, treatment that I was given or doing. And I went through CBT and given every different combination under the sun, and nothing was really working. And then I the first time I did it again after that was like, it was like going home. It was like, oh, okay, this is familiar. I feel like I'm home. I feel like I can process these things and deal with these things and kind of reset my mind and allow myself to really take a step back and analyze what's going on here. And I know there's a lot of people, you know, with the mental health crisis that probably, you know, are looking for options. And I think that that's why I'm so supportive of this movement, not just because I believe in it, but because I've experienced it myself. So, have you had any, you know, mental health things in the past where this has been helpful, or is it more of just like that you said, like more trauma from, you know, the younger years or something like that?
Well, you know, I'm definitely aware that I need to take care of my mental wellness. Right. So I want to use that term. I want to talk about mental wellness.
Okay.
And that means different things for different people. And I, you know, I can tend towards depression a little bit. You know, I can be impulsive. I'm not exactly neurotypical. And I find that, you know, some of this stuff at the right time, you know, like you were saying, you take a break, and breaks are good. You know, we don't do everything all the time, but finding a sort of a whole stack, like a whole regimen of like mental health and well-being is really an idea whose time has come, right? We are not taught to prioritize that thing, right? There is, you know, mental health is also a stigma. Right. And so like if you're going to see a therapist, you know, for a long time, what did that mean? Like only like very mentally ill people went to see therapists. It wasn't necessarily people who cared about their mental well-being and their mental health.
Right.
Who would go see a therapist to just kind of work things out and keep things just like you would see a personal trainer.
Right.
Right. Or a dentist. Right. You know, you're going to wait until you have bad teeth to go see a dentist. And so, you know, hopefully we are finding a meditation practice that works for us, and we're finding a physical practice that works for us and a dietary practice that works for us, because all of those things are connected and we matter enough, right? We are not prioritized in a late capitalist system.
Right.
You know, well, go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, that's what I like to attribute it to. It's like, if you had a broken leg and you didn't go to a doctor, you'd be looked at as a fool. But for some reason, when you have these mental problems, something in our society has made us feel like it's not okay to go get this mental help. But someone said that, and that was like something that always stuck to my head. It's like your mind is something part of your body, and if it's broken or needs help to get to heal, then you should seek out that help. So.
Mm-hmm.
I would also point out too, like, I was just watching Mad Men with my wife, you know, reruns or whatever, like a few weeks ago. And there was an episode, and this was what, the 50s and the early 60s, and they're talking, oh, well, so-and-so went to shrink. Oh, my God. You know, it was like the crazy. And I think that that's how it used to be. And I think that you're right. I think that that's why we're kind of in the position that we're in to some degree. It was a combination of the stigma, and then they stopped all the psychedelic research, what, early 70s, I think, was the last test. And then Rick Strassman kind of revitalized it with the DMT experiments, and now you have all the psychedelic research happening, which is awesome. But yeah, I think that it is stigmatized.
I think even the 90s it was like that.
But my whole point, and I always say this on the podcast, is I don't know anybody that doesn't have some form of mental issues in terms of, like, you know, anxiety or depression or anything. It's just like there's so many terms and things out there now that I don't know anybody that doesn't have something, right? I mean, I don't know if that's true for you, but everybody's got their own thing. So I don't know why it's stigmatized at all.
Well, the thing is, you know, again, we're all very different, and we're all, you know, expected to fit into like one box. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't really work. And I sort of feel like, you know, mental health is a lot like dental health. It's like your teeth, you know, it's like not everybody is sort of like just kind of broken. You know, it's like this like a broken bone, you were saying. Like, if you had a broken bone, you go fix it. A lot of people are in a situation of like the state of your teeth. Like, you brush your teeth every day. Like, if you didn't brush your teeth every day, people would be like, whoa. And you'd be like, I don't have a cavity.
Yeah.
Right. And so a lot of people, it's sort of this kind of quality, like frog in the pot sort of thing, you know, where our situation kind of gets slowly worse and slowly worse and slowly worse. And we don't notice it, or we don't have time for it, or we'll take care of it after like the Q2 reports or something like that, you know, or whatever it is, you know, whatever like the important deadline in your life is. And it just kind of gets put on the back burner until there's a crisis. And we just need to stop like waiting for crisis.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. It is something. I mean, I'm definitely guilty of that. I mean, I'm sure most people are, but that putting it off till the last second, till it becomes dire. And I think that
waiting for the dam to break isn't the best move.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried to get better, but yeah, it is tough. So with Tam,
well, can I just say thank you for working on it? Thank you for like taking care of yourself.
Oh yeah, no, thank you. I mean, it's these kinds of conversations and people like you that are out there bringing people together, putting these groups together and connecting people. I mean, that's, like I said, that's what it's all about. I mean, I feel good when somebody sends me an email and says, thank you for talking about your OCD, or thank you for discussing, you know, these topics or whatever. It makes me feel good, because it's like, I know that that doesn't happen that often. And I know that there needs to be more of this. So I appreciate you saying thank you. Right. And I also say, thank you, good sir. So,
well, because because you're doing important work. You know, this podcast touches people for sure.
Well, I appreciate that. So with the integration thing, I was going to ask you, you do these circles and these groups. I still haven't done like a ceremony or been around people. The only thing I can relate it to is when I was younger and we would all, me and my friends or whoever in the group was like, let's take, you know, psilocybin, or let's do this, or let's do that, or let's go to a show, you know. And it's like, there was instances where I didn't feel connected to them in a positive way. It was more like, oh, this friend's kind of a piece of shit of a person, and I don't know why I'm friends with this person, and I don't like things myself, and I don't like things about myself in the way that I interact with people, and you know, I'm associating with this person. And some of those people I was right about, by the way. But I think that, you know, is that something that's normal, when you think, when you're growing up or doing that stuff at, you know, those kinds of age groups? Or do you think that that's something that is just insight into a specific situation?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's always hard to know whether we're projecting or whether we're having insight.
Right.
You know, there's certainly, again, in this culture, people have a lot of self-hatred, you know, and it's interesting. You know, I start talking about self-hatred, and then people reach out to me and they're like, oh, I hope you're okay. And I was like, I just want to tell everybody, I'm kind of talking about me, but I'm also kind of talking about everybody. You know, it's like we all sort of have these some internalized ways that we don't like ourselves. And that stuff gets brought up. And some of it's legitimate criticism. And sometimes we're just picking on ourselves. And then sometimes when we're picking on ourselves, we pick on other people too. You know, it's just sort of the way that we do things. And so, you know, on one hand, we have to gain the wisdom. And, you know, I spent a little time in some 12-step programs. And it's, you know, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, the wisdom to know the difference. And it's like sometimes you have to step up and make a change in your life. Sometimes you just have to notice, oh, I'm beating myself up for no reason and knock it off. Mm. You know, and I do want to talk about, like, if there are young people here, you know, I'm 46, you know, people are an increasing number of people are young people to me. But if there are young people here who haven't had experiences with ceremony, one thing that I would say is just add a little reverence to your session, you know. Maybe you could, you know, the first thing that you can do is just talk to the medicine and tell it what you want and ask it to help you. Mm. If you want it to help you, like, put it in your hands and look at it and say, please help me. All right. I really thank you for being, thank you for showing up, because psychedelics are hard to find because the law. So thank you. And then maybe with your friends, build an altar together. You know, just get the things to you that are important or meaningful or special or sacred, and just as an art project together, build an altar together. You know, stick a picture of your grandpa on it, you know, and just like hang out, spend a little time. You know, maybe you're going to spend a little time dancing to music or getting a little crazy or making a bunch of jokes. Spend a little time like checking out your altar together, you know, and I will bet, I'll bet you a dollar that it changes the tenor of your journey. And it's just like, you don't, it doesn't have, you don't have to be a priest to add a little ceremony to your journey.
Yeah, I agree about the reverence for sure. And I think that that's super, super important. I didn't develop that probably till my late 20s, early 30s. And that's kind of what I was mentioning. It's like, I kind of went through this realization through these, having these experiences with people, not in circles, but like I said, like social hanging out environments or going to shows and stuff. Like, I'm going to separate myself from these people because they're kind of doing their own thing that isn't conducive to kind of what I'm trying to do. And I, at some point I'm just kind of separated myself entirely and started doing my own thing. And when I started doing my own thing, I started to develop like the connection to the medicine or plant or fungus, whatever. And it, it became apparent that like there's more to this, and there's a spiritual or esoteric aspect to this that even if you did share it, it's really not the same thing as experiencing that inside. But again, I'm bringing this up because I, like I said, I know you set up these circles and there's good intentions because everybody that's there wants to be there and wants to contribute this like positive energy. And I think that that's completely different than what we were, like what I was just discussing, which is how most people get into this kind of stuff.
Well, I do want to make a distinction that I don't lead psychedelic ceremony.
No. I just meant like connecting people.
Yeah. The integration circles are for people who've had experiences that want to talk about them in community. So we meet every Wednesday. And we have a women's circle on those first and third Thursdays where people who have had powerful experiences who kind of want to take them apart and make meaning and sometimes get support and sometimes get feedback and just be with like-minded people because maybe they don't have a local community. You know, they have, you know, terrible friends like you did. You know, they want some nicer friends.
I mean, Maurice, you know, was always one of my friends, but he knows what I'm talking about too. Like there's people that are, that don't have the same intentions. And I think that that's just basically what it comes down to.
Well, that's the kind of stuff you fall into when you're in high school. You have a great group of friends and then there's other cliques that kind of join you and not everybody is made out for each other. And then as you grow older, some of the friends you continue to hang with, and then it kind of weeds it out of your life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you're young, you just, you know, you smoke pot with the other kids that smoke pot.
Absolutely.
You know, You got to figure it out. You know, who's really your people at some point. And that's kind of a fun journey. There's this algorithm that, you know, I was listening to a podcast one time about like algorithms for life. And there's something called the explore exploit algorithm. Have you guys heard of this?
No.
I really like it because as I enter, you know, I'm sort of hanging out in middle age right now. I'm more in the exploit phase, and exploit's not necessarily a bad word in math. It just means you use what you have.
Right.
And so, you know, when we're new to something, we explore it. Like if you move to a new town and you want to go eat Thai food, you go to a Thai restaurant, and then that's your only barometer. And then you keep exploring. So you go to a different Thai restaurant, and there's a 50-50 chance it's better. And then you go to another Thai restaurant, and, you know, the percentages change. And then after you go to maybe 5 or 6, you're like, you know what? I like that one. And then you just go there for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like you explore the ways that the medicines work for you until you sort of get better at it. And then you just kind of do it that way. And then maybe you mess up, or maybe you learn something new and it changes a little bit. But, you know, you explore it until you get comfortable and you develop a relationship. You know, you guys have had, how long you guys known each other?
I mean, we're cousins our whole lives.
Right. So you kind of know how it works. Your relationship makes sense to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like either of you is going to go start a podcast with a stranger tomorrow.
Oh, I might.
I was going to say. Well,
yeah, I mean, I'm looking for a new partner.
I'm in.
I was talking about Maurice.
Uh-oh.
I'm recruiting Maurice. No, I'm just
if you want to make a comedy joke here or there, then you came to the right place, my friend.
No, actually, I'm really impressed with Maurice's spiritual development in the last couple of years, because it was something when we got into this, he was just interested in some of the stuff, and I think that he's definitely grown on his own right in this realm of things that we discuss. So I really can appreciate him for that.
Well, it's one thing to have a conversation on a canoe trip about the stars and aliens and stuff like that. Then it's another thing to create a podcast. And me and Michael have done some research and looked at a lot of the reasons podcasts fail, and most of them can't make it past episode 10. So to be on, what is it, episode like 213 or something? 212. So yeah, you definitely need somebody to light the fire under your butt, and Michael does all the research, so we'll give him a round of applause, if you know what I mean.
Right on. Why do most podcasts fail? We shouldn't get into that. That's a different episode.
I was actually going to ask you, though, because you do something really cool, and I don't know if you're still doing it, but you do this thing where you interview musicians and creative people as a podcast, and is that something that just kind of happened, or did you have that in mind going into it? Or, I mean, what was your inspiration for that?
Right. So it was called Instrumental Breakthroughs.
Yeah.
And it probably had about 35 episodes.
Okay.
And it was sort of it was my pandemic project.
Okay.
And, you know, we had moved online. One of my favorite podcasts is No Simple Road.
Okay.
You know, it's basically these really nice hippies from Oregon interview musicians. And they're really sweet guys, and they've spoken at my conferences, and I've been on their podcast, and we're friends and stuff. But so I was inspired by them. And then I don't know if you know Brian Markowitz. He runs something called Deadhead Land. It's a Facebook group where he streams a lot of live music and stuff like that, keeps up with the set lists. And he, you know, the pandemic happened, and he was moving everybody, all his friends who were musicians, online where they could play for tips. And he said, will you do like your integration thing on my channel? And I said, well, how about we like mix my integration thing with some music? And I'll interview musicians, and I'll talk to them about how psychedelics inspired their creativity.
Which was really unique. And that's what I loved about it. Cause I don't really hear, even like if you listen to like some of the Dead podcasts or Fish podcasts or whatever, they'll talk about it, but it's not talked about in a way that is understood from like the musician or the creative aspect of things and how that plays out, you know? So I thought that was actually one of the more interesting aspects of it. I actually listened to a few of them there. I enjoyed them. So.
Yeah. Well, thanks. It was good while it lasted. You know what I mean?
So it's something you're not going to do going forward.
I don't know if I am. I mean, it ran about a year.
Okay.
And we made it past 10.
Okay. There you go.
That's a big step.
But I felt pretty complete with it.
I understand.
To be honest, like, booking was tough.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, it's sort of, you know, it's, you know, you, I tour through all my friends and my friends of friends. And, you know, it's sort of tough to get, you know, a very particular, it was a very niche. And so to get, you know, a musician that somebody wants to listen to them talk instead of play is one thing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then a musician that somebody actually wants to listen to who does psychedelics is another.
Right.
And then a musician that people want to listen to who actually does psychedelics, who's willing to talk about it, is another. And so
right.
as you're in this very narrow pool. But it was, and then, you know, I'm doing things like the summit, and it was just like, you know, I
too much.
Busy. Yeah. It was too much. And it was like, it's a nice artifact, and I'm glad I did it. And it was really nice to kind of work with my friends who helped. But I think we're good.
Yeah, I understand. Everything runs its course sometimes, and you know, like you said, you have too much going on. But I just wanted to say that I did appreciate that, and I liked the episodes I listened to. And Maurice and I are both musicians. That's what I was doing before we started this podcast. I was playing in
Yeah, are you
bands.
A musician? I was going to ask you.
I am, you know, I can play along around a campfire. You know, I play guitar. You know, I have a ukulele too. Trying to teach my kid to play ukulele. I have not a lot of urge to get on stage. I like campfires. I like living rooms, that kind of thing.
That's interesting because I'm almost the exact opposite. My cousin, me and Michael's other cousin, Rob, we were on our canoe trip this year, and he's like, let's play around the fire. And I for some reason, I get nervous. I don't like to play in my living room in front of people. But when it's in the stage atmosphere, when I have a band behind me, I feel a lot more comfortable. So I don't know. I am quite shy when it comes to that thing because it's quite a personal endeavor. But I don't even consider myself really a musician. I would consider myself more of a songwriter artist to that degree, where I don't really know much music theory. I kind of write, like, I don't even know what the chords are that I'm playing. I would just write a song that, you know, I took a poetry class in college and I was really into the poetry thing. And I like to combine the words and the music. I think that's a nice art form. Obviously, the human race is connected a lot to song with lyrics, and that it evokes moods within us. So that's the kind of the approach I like to take it. But I think it's kind of interesting that you like to do the opposite of what I like to do.
Yeah, I just want to be with the folks. I did perform a couple of years ago at my wedding.
Oh, nice.
So we got married at one of my wife's family's homes in Rhode Island. And I Googled Grateful Dead cover band Rhode Island. And there were, you know, I found five crappy bar bands. And then one that was like, and one acoustic band. It was like, you know, banjo, stand-up bass, guitar, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's cool.
And I was like, those are my guys. And, you know, I when I was living in Marin County, you know, there's Grateful Dead people there. And,
yeah.
you know, Mark Caron. You guys know Mark Caron?
No, but I mean, I know, you know, all the people in California, like the...
Yeah.
The jam scene there is pretty heavy, especially with Deadheads and dead people.
Yeah. So Mark played Jerry's part in like The Dead for a while, you know, like 2005-ish. He was in Rat Dog for a while.
Mm.
And he gives guitar lessons, you know, just like if you're around. He's a neighborhood guy.
Yeah.
And so we worked on How Sweet It Is. And then I told the band, and like the band really backed it up. And it was really fun. You know, it was a little terrifying. But, you know, you do things for, you know, you love your wife, you sing her a song on her wedding day.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was nice.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, you know, if, you know, I think that, you know, if I ever get married again, maybe I'll play another song.
It's also sweet to get your wife to have a Grateful Dead cover band as your wedding band.
Right. Well, you know, the deal was you can definitely be in charge of everything else. Yeah. picking the band. Like, you can have everything else exactly the way you want it. You know,
I mean, it's unfortunate. We were actually only 11 when Jerry died, but I mean, we were able to see the other ones when they toured with everybody and Robert Hunter, except for Jerry, obviously. We were able to see that a few times. And
Tons of Dark Star.
Yeah, Dark Star Orchestra always played around the theaters around where we grew up, so we were always checking them out when we were
Where'd
younger.
You grow up?
Like the suburbs of Detroit. So just that Detroit area, like the Royal Oak Music Theater and like all those places, you know, always had jam bands coming in and out. So,
that's great.
But yeah, you know, that's why we got into Phish really is because more of the instrumental stuff and, like the jazzy influence and everything like that. But I mean, I love them equally, you know, I hate people that, you know, take a dump on either one or like talk shit online about either one. Cause it's like, I love them both equally, you know, as a musician, I respect both Jerry and Trey. So, I never really understood the hate, but,
I'm not going to hate on anybody. I mean, Jerry is kind of supreme in my mind. You know, it's not even a competition. There's no competition. It's just like Jerry is there and it's like, you know, you can't, that's no disrespect to anybody else.
No.
Well, I don't think that Phish would have existed or had the inspiration if they didn't have a jam band that was fusing the blues and the jazz into the rock kind of scene. Mm-hmm. So you need that band. And also Jerry influenced so many others besides Trey, but you know, it's hard to compare their two musics, but it's like you need one to.
Yeah, I don't compare them at all. Usually, like if I want to feel emotional, I'll put on like Broke Down Palace, or you know, or if I want to feel kind of like a little a vibe of a live show, I'll throw on any of the Europe 72 or my second favorite year 77. You know, any of that stuff, and then, you know, for the Phish, it's different. As a guitarist, I always gravitated more towards Trey because I feel like there's a lot more. You know, early days Trey, like there's a lot more pushing the boundaries of what actually playing the guitar is all about. And I think that Jerry did the same thing for his time. And we just were unfortunately not of that time. So I think that that's kind of where that kind of differed. But
let's not forget Government Mule.
I love Warren Haynes. Yeah. Allman Brothers. I mean, the Allman Brothers is actually what Maurice and I have a kinship over is all the early Allman Brothers stuff and Derek Trucks. I love all that stuff. So
yeah, well, it's all from your parents.
Like 15. I saw Derek Trucks, I believe, playing with one of the Allman Brothers, not like the whole Allman Brothers band, but like one of them was like playing at La Luna in Portland, Oregon, and Derek was allowed to play for the first set, but then he had to like go to bed.
Yeah, it was probably Greg Allman's when he was doing his thing. But I mean, it's great. He looks like one of the Allman Brothers too. He doesn't look like Butch Truck's son. He looks like he's like, you know, Dwayne's kid or, you know, Greg's kid or something. But I mean, we love all that. That's like kind of like our background is all that stuff. Actually, I mean, initially we got into like, you know, in high school, we read Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test and all these books on like On the Road and all these things that kind of opened our mind to all that kind of a culture, the Merry Pranksters and Ken Kesey and the Acid Tests and all that stuff that was happening. And that kind of like, whoa, we got to get on the road. We have to experience life kind of a thing. And that's why we enjoyed the jam band thing, because we were able to travel and see some of these shows even in high school. So,
yeah, indeed. And you know who I think is the sweetest guy is Dave Schools and like his production work. I'm not like the hugest Panic head.
Seen him a few times. But,
yeah, but I like Dave Schools' vibe is really, really nice. Just feel like saying that for whatever reason.
No, it's cool. I like Dave Schools. I like Panic. I like obviously the earlier days with Mikey, but I think, I mean, Jimmy Herring's one of my favorite guitar players, so bringing him into the mix is a good call, definitely. And
and
when
then
you played
his
with
project
the Dead,
with
too.
Jazz is Dead, too.
Oh, I love Jazz. I still throw on that CD, and it's hard to find. I don't think they play it on YouTube or anything, but, you know, like King Solomon's Marbles. Oh, you do? Yeah, like all that stuff's amazing to me.
Yeah.
What's your So in terms of like what you're doing going forward, are you just going to continue to do like these psilocybin summits and these integration circles and that kind of stuff? Or do you have anything, is it like evolving towards something else, or is that kind of the plan?
Well, I like doing them. I might need to take a break for a minute because more and more people are coming to me for training. Hmm. Yeah, I'm a coach too. I do a lot of one-on-one work with people, preparation, integration, that kind of stuff. And I have a class called Sitting for Psychonauts, which is aka Meditation for the Journey. Hmm. And it was originally designed for people to be their own best trip sitter. You know, it's like to sort of meditators have more fun in psychedelic spaces. They just, control you have over your mind, like the more capable you are to, you know, handle curveballs and stuff like that. And then what started happening is like therapists and other trip sitters and guides started showing up to learn more meditation techniques. And that's been really cool and really rewarding. It's just sort of like this really cool group of folks. Mm-hmm. And the people want me to expand the training. And that's so good. when this summit is over, I'm going to, you know, get a massage and take a nap and maybe go to a yoga class. And then I'm going to, you know, work on evolving the training into, you know, something that's, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 months long.
That sounds good. How do you feel about, cause now science kind of is taking, a bigger hold on this this psychedelic culture, and obviously we owe a ton to the indigenous communities that kept this thing alive, all the clandestine chemists, all the heads, you know, everybody out there that kept this thing going when it was either illegal or frowned upon or whatever the case may be, and now science is taking hold of this and kind of picking it apart and everything, and you see even the money sector, and they're trying to come up with their own you know, patents and chemicals and everything like that. Do you see this going in a way where they can kind of coexist, or do you feel like one will eventually win over the other? Because it seems like the scientists we've talked to, the psychedelic scientists, are really cool and they want to keep the trip or the psychedelic aspect of it. But then you have people trying to, like, there's Tabanathalog, which is trying to help people with addiction, which doesn't have any psychedelic component to it at all. And you have these chemicals where they're trying to separate the actual psychedelic side of things from, you know, the experience. So do you think that, you know, that will have a positive effect going forward, or do you think that all these things will coexist?
I think it's a minor issue. Okay. You know, that we're talking about like one small subset of a thing that's probably useful for like a kid who has trauma. Hmm. You know, do you want to subject a kid to an 8-hour like psychedelic trip to help them deal with their trauma, or do you want them to have sort of an easier time? People are never going to stop growing mushrooms in their closet.
Right.
You know, we have nothing to worry about. There's always going to be people growing mushrooms, you know, just like in cannabis, it's like there's still people who are growing and selling their weed very happily and successfully outside, you know, the legal model.
Right.
You know, because, you know, I mean, there are problems with the legal model and it is restrictive and gatekeeping and things like that. But mushrooms are easier to grow than weed. And it takes less mushrooms to get high than weed. You know, it's like it's very hard to grow as much weed as you want to smoke in a year.
Right.
Right. If you're a smoker, I'm not a smoker. It's very easy to grow more than enough mushrooms than you could ever eat in your lifetime. Mm. You know, just is, you know, 3-week flush or whatever. And it's like, what are you going to do with all that? You know, you've got to share it.
Right.
That's not legal advice. I'm not telling you legally, of course, you know, don't break the law, kids. Don't ask TAM Integration for medical or legal advice.
Like, no, that's important. I know, like, on all these forums, I know our buddy who created that app, DMT World, it's like the hardest thing to keep the sourcing out of all this. And even on our comments, when I post stuff on Instagram, it's like people jump in with these, you know, trying to like sell stuff online. It's like, get out of here. Don't do that on here. That's not, you know, obviously that's not a good call. So I don't know.
Well, I understand that people are having a tough time. Because things are illegal. Right. And also people are having a tough time making ends meet. And so, you know, they're selling, and there needs to be people who are selling, and there needs to be people who are buying.
But it's like people comment the same comment like 10 times on like an Instagram post. It's like, you know, get out of here with that. You know, like there's other places.
Yeah, that's just rude.
Yeah. But I mean, it is what it is. I don't disagree with you. Like, I know, you know, that's part of that, but it's just like, I don't know. It's just weird now because I don't think about it in the same way. When we grew up, getting stuff was kind of like a, oh my gosh, this is a, you know, it was like an event, like, oh, let's do, you know, and now it's like, it's kind of
cannabis. That was,
yeah. I mean, now it's a lot more prevalent, but I mean, I don't, so you're not a smoke. Have you ever been a smoker or a vapor or anything in combination?
Yeah.
I do feel like there is some synergy with those two.
Sure. I mean, I eat an edible once in a while. You know, I'm not a daily smoker.
Right.
You know, sometimes I hit a vape pen, but I really want to meditate with it.
Sure.
It's not really. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not really doing it in like big groups or in social situations and things like that.
Yeah.
And really, I stopped smoking before vapes were a thing. You know, there'd be like two guys. I knew, you know, when I stopped smoking, there were like two guys that had like huge volcano looking things.
Yeah.
It was like proto.
Yeah. Those volcano bags are enormous.
Yeah.
Do you, I don't know. I always felt like coming down, it always like helped me process things a little bit and give me a little bit more clarity on my situation. But that's just me personally. I know everybody's different. And I went through a weird phase in high school too, where I got in trouble for some things and I wasn't smoking. So I actually could just do psilocybin because it was like the one thing like nobody was really even expecting or anything. So, yeah, that was kind of an interesting time. But, why do you think that, back to like this whole science versus spiritual and mystical, why do you think that?
I don't want there to be a versus, by the way.
Okay, no versus then. Why do you think that there are some scientists or people doing research that want to take the spiritual element out of it? Do you think that that's just the nature of what they're doing? And do you think that that, like you, it seems like you don't really think it matters is kind of what the vibe that I'm getting. Like, you don't think that like when I say that, I mean,
what don't I think matters?
It's based on what I was saying about in terms of like the money sector and then the science sector, kind of like, you know, I don't know. I, again, we haven't had anybody on the show, but I have seen people on Twitter and social media, scientists saying, you know, all this spiritual nonsense associated with psychedelics or anybody having a mystical experience or psychedelic entities, like that's not even needed. It's not, you know, we can make this not part of the thing. I've seen that. So I guess for me, I guess what I'm asking is, do you think that that'll get weeded out, or do you think that that'll stick around and that'll just be different, you know, like you said, like offsets or subsets or whatever?
I think one of the things that makes me super grumpy is, you'll see this in internet arguments a lot, is there'll be some sort of argument and then some guy, it's always a guy, will say, if you just did more ayahuasca, then you would know the truth. Right? So there's this trope that's like, if you took enough of the drug that I think is important, you know, the drug that I think is special, you would believe the same way I did. And that's ridiculous. You know, it's like, people are different neurologically, people are different karmically, you know, people are different emotionally, and people are going to have different opinions. And, you know, I know that there's like a big, weird divide right now. And like, you know, it's very black and white in our culture these days, the way people think. But diversity is cool, like in nature. Like, I don't want to live in a Christmas tree farm. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to live in a rainforest where like all kinds of cool things are happening all the time, where if you want to listen to this music, you can, or you want to listen to that music, you can, if you want to believe this, you want to believe that. And like all that stuff happens harmoniously. And so if there are like science guys who want to do rigid research that's very precise, then that's great. That's not interesting to me, but right. It's needed. You know, I want to like hang out with, you know, I want to hang out at the shows, and I want to hang out, you know, in the forests with my friends doing the kind of stuff that I'm doing. I want to build altars with my friends, you know? And so it's like, it's a big world, you know, just like do the thing that you want to do with integrity and we're good.
No, I like that. I guess what I was just trying to get at, though, is those are the people that'll probably be dictating laws and policy based on their evidence and the way that they push things. So I guess back to what I said about it not mattering, it sounds like you're under the assumption, which I kind of, I guess, agree with, is that this has always happened regardless of law or science, and people will always find a way to do it regardless of that. So it doesn't really matter. I guess that's more of a...
I mean, decrim is gaining speed. You know, it's like decriminalization is unstoppable.
Yeah, it's Oregon, California, and Colorado, right? Those are the three so far.
There's all kinds of little towns you've never heard of. There's like Somerville, Massachusetts is decriminalized. What?
Ann Arbor, I know, is decriminalized.
Yeah, like all these like random little places are just like super decriminalized, and like people are just taking it upon themselves to go to city council and be like, leave me alone. Mm-hmm. And city council's like, okay. I mean, it's a sea change, and you know, and this is why integration and community integration is so important, is that as this happens, we still need to take care of each other. You know, the point of decriminalization is so that we can sort of come out of the closet, as it were. And we can start to be honest about what we're doing without fear, and be able to talk to each other and share information without fear. And if we're having a hard time with something, that we can get support from our peers without fear. Mm-hmm. You know, people who like love us just because they understand, right? You didn't have to do anything. It's like, you're on this path, I'm on this path. Tell me what's up.
Right.
Let me support you. And like, that's what community integration is all about. You know, as the decrim happens, you know, this is not so that you can just eat mushrooms and watch football on Sundays. I mean, if you want to, you know, this is so that we can, you know, fun. Move more towards our
I'm suspect of anybody that wants to watch natural TV state. After eating mushrooms.
You know, what do you gotta, what do I watch sometimes coming down? Do you know David Hawkins?
No.
He's a, you know, a new age spiritual teacher. He talks a lot about levels of consciousness. He's like a very peaceful, high vibration guy. He talks about like, you know, the spontaneous emergence of the intelligence of the universe and how it's all love. And, you know, sometimes I'll throw that on YouTube and put it in the corner and listen to it with my eyes closed.
Sounds yeah. I mean, I might listen to like a book on tape or like an audio book or something like that, but I try and watch stuff. Normally I'm like, I can't do this. And it just feels like a waste to me, because closing my eyes and like imagining the universe or the stars or the way things work or how they might work or like the possibilities is far more interesting to me than anything that can be found on YouTube or TV or something like that.
Yeah, we do not spend enough time with laying on our back with our eyes closed listening to music.
Yeah,
I remember when there were records. I think it's like, you know, some of it is, you know, we have these little screens that are so easily available, but then there was also something magical about the record, about vinyl. You know, people would put on vinyl and they would like, you know, sit on their belly and like look at the liner notes, you know, and lay on their back and close their eyes and wait for the record, and then do rock, paper, scissors to see who would flip it over.
I remember the first time I got like super baked when I was a lot younger, and going home, sneaking in, throwing on Dark Side of the Moon, and just the ambience and the background noise and the space between things. And it just, it takes you there for sure. Like, I think that's why so many people love Pink Floyd, is because there's something so unique and artistic about what they do.
Yeah. One of the things I like about Pink Floyd is that it's challenging. You know, is that, you know, nowadays, as I'm older and more, I don't know, more, you know, just things are chiller. I like things a little bit more chill. You know, I listen to a lot of like Kirtan and New Age stuff and things like that. Really like chanting. It's a big part of my thing. But when I was younger, it's like, you know, like the intensity of Pink Floyd was like really pushed through some stuff.
Yeah.
And it's an important contribution to psychedelic culture. they made.
Oh, absolutely. That live at Pompeii when it's just them in that amphitheater, holy. I mean, that is
unlike anything else.
It's one of my favorite things. And just even when we were younger in high school, we'd watch it. We'd be like, this is insane. This is, you know, this is.
I don't even think we realized what it was when we watched it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean, that's absolutely, you know, what I think. And look, when it comes down to it, it's like, I feel like I get a vibe from you. You're very chill. You're not really worried about a lot of the things that people are really worried about. So even just,
I'm worried about some stuff.
No, I know, but I'm saying like, even me asking that question, I felt awkward about the science versus, cause that is something that I normally ask. I'm just curious on people's opinions on that, but I felt you're so chill and not worried. Like, I like that. Like, I want to be around people like that, where things like that aren't a thing and we can focus more attention on the things that should matter as opposed to, you know, controversial topics or whatever the case may be. So I appreciate your vibe and your chillness. And I think that we could all strive to be a little bit more laid back about some of this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I have friends who are better activists than I, you know, it's like, I'm not spearheading decriminalization efforts.
Right.
You know, it's not my strong suit. You know, my strong suit is the inner work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, I don't want to, you know, I want to be like 80-20 on inner work versus outer work.
Right.
You know, just because it makes me better at what I do. You know, it's like God put us here for a reason, quote unquote, God, replace it with whatever word doesn't make you bristle. You know, and so it's kind of like, well, Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, better to do your dharma imperfectly than other people's dharma perfectly.
Mm.
So it's like, what in dharma, you know, means way, you know, it's like the right thing for you to do. And so we all have to kind of figure out what is the right thing for us to do and then try and stay in our lane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people invite me to do things sometimes that are just like, not my thing. Sure. And, you know, it might even be good and it might be profitable, but I know that like, it's probably not going to work out that well. I'm not really actually suited to that.
Mm.
You know, that's not what I need to be doing. You know, it's just, it's being a good coach enough, you know, like whatever you do is just like being a really good, whatever you are enough for you.
No,
and
I like,
you know,
that.
I don't want to get pulled out to like whatever the other thing is.
No, I think that with social media, our phones being tethered to us for the most part, and you know, all the different things going on, I think it's like we're almost being drawn to this external group realization that can be negative in a lot of ways. And I don't think that I think we're so early with technology and with phones and being able to hear everybody's opinion from across the world at all times, that we don't really know how to deal with it. We don't even know how to deal with ourselves, and somehow we're externalizing everything right now. And I think, like you mentioned, it's you got to go within, you know. That's why, like I said, I like meditating in darkness, or even when I'm not on any sort of psychoactive compounds, the meditating in darkness is key for me. I like to visualize things. I like to go places in my mind, even when it's not just stillness and empty thoughts and things like that. So, yeah, like I said, I like your vibe and I like what you're doing for sure. And I know we could probably wrap it up here, but like I said, I just really appreciate what you're doing, and I appreciate your attitude and the way you bring people together via the summit and these integration circles. And if anybody's interested, you can go on the website. I'll put the link down below after we're done here. And you can check out the, you know, TAM Integration website, and they've got tons of resources on there. It's a really well put together website, and yeah, thank you so much, man.
Yeah, well, you know, thanks for noticing, thanks for inviting me on. This has been a blast. I look forward to catching a show with you guys.
Yeah, for sure.
Sweet too.
Yeah. Where are you at these days? Are you West Coast, East Coast?
I'm on the East Coast right now. I'm in like Western Massachusetts, very close to the New York border.
Okay.
Sort of like in the woods. Yeah, it's not terrible.
Well, we get around, and I know Maurice, he's always hiking West Coast too. So I'm sure that there'll be different times for us to link up. And yeah, I mean, I'm down. I'm always down to meet cool people too. You know, in the wild, not just on social media or these platforms. Yeah. So. But yeah, thank you so much, man. Is there anything else you want to get in there before we wrap it up here?
No, I mean, Yeah, just, you know, look inside. Don't get distracted by fear and panic. Be nice to one another. That's all.
All right. That's a great message. We should, like I said, we could all strive to be more like that. And listen, you know, this has been a blast. We'll definitely have you back on in the future. And I hope everybody that's following the show, check out the Psilocybin Summit. What are the days again, if you want to repeat that?
September 16th to the 20th.
16th through the 20th. And amazing guests. Again, I was part of it last year. Just the quality of the guests and even the people participating and listening and then asking questions after. They're really thoughtful questions and really thoughtful people that participated. So I really appreciate that as well. So check that out, and we'll put the link down below for you to check out the website. And that's it. Before we head on out of here, if everybody would just, again, go to our Patreon at patreon.com/mindescapepodcast for just $2 a month. You know, you'll get exclusive content. If you like the psychedelic stuff, we've got extra segments on there with tons of people. You know, there's just a ton of stuff on there. So go check it out. And one more time, head on over to indrasweb.org. This is a social media platform we created to connect open minds.
Oh, wow.
So if you want to discuss this, any of the stuff that we've been talking about or any of the time on this podcast, not just psychedelic stuff, but, you know, ancient civilization stuff, metaphysics, you know, like the nature of reality, theories of everything, that's the place to do it. We are still working on trying to get it in the App Store. I will definitely announce that when we do. And one more thing, if you listen to the show and we're trying to grow our presence on Apple Podcast, we do have t-shirts available, so we're going to do a t-shirt giveaway actually at the end of September. So if you've not given us a 5-star review, not that you need to give us a 5-star, but just give us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, we will definitely be, you know, take a screenshot of it, send it to our email, and then I'll pick a winner and we will give away a t-shirt at the end of the month. So, well, we are out of here. So I love everybody. Stay safe out there, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.
Peace.